Welcome. This Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Julian Edlow of DraftKings will join us. We will go over a little of everything. The NBA Summer League, which starts here in a couple days, which I am not into, to be honest. But you know what? It's a situation where last year it produced 100-1, 150-1 winner with the Hornets. So, hey, we'll see if there's another long shot out there lurking. We'll talk some NFL, some NBA offseason. So excited to talk to Julian. And we enter kind of the dog days of summer. The World Cup starts to slow down. Goodbye, USA. That was an awful performance on Monday night. Get out and goodbye and do not come back. That was rough to watch. Good run all in all, but that was a bitter ending. Boy, that was embarrassing Monday night. But Wednesday, no game. Thursday, one game. Friday, one game. You start to go one game at a time, one game a day, where it feels like the last month, every time you look at the TV or you look at your app, there's a game on all day, all night, pretty much. There, it's wall to wall, which has been fun. It's been a nice addition, but that is going to start to slow down here. It's almost felt like the NCAA tournament, where it's just games on all the time. But that's going to, like the NCAA tournament, start to slow down here as we pair off teams. Baseball on Wednesday. There's one bet I like: the Brewers laying $1.25 here with Harrison going against McGreevy. McGreevy to me is a big time regression candidate. A lot of hard contact, not a lot of velocity, strand rate, all the things you look for, all of those indicators suggest McGreevy has some poor performances coming. Harrison is very solid. I think that's a very playable price here on Milwaukee. The Yankees strike out a million times on Tuesday. That's the big series right now. They go into the series down five games in the loss column. Win Monday, lose Tuesday, so at least he can't get swept. At least he can't walk out of Tropicana nine games out, but we'll see what they do on Wednesday. McClanahan, who's a tough pitcher, and the Yankees have a lot of lefties in that lineup, so that's a tough matchup going against Cole, who has not been great, was a little bit better last time out, but the total 7.5 and Tampa a -125 favorite. No feel there. The division right now, Yankees still -115, Tampa -105. Okay. I mean, they're basically telling you it's a coin flip. I don't know at this point. I genuinely don't know. I said a few days ago, Yankees with a little bit of confidence, not beating the Twins, who they always beat, that's almost a red flag that, you know what, something is just wrong with this team. This is not going to be fixed to the point where it needs to be fixed. And Stanton and Judge are really, really far away still. So I don't know. I think that's properly priced. But Yankees got a lot of issues right now. Thank God for them they win the game on Monday. Otherwise, this had the possibility here of really getting away from them in the division. Other games on Wednesday, Blue Jays and Giants in the afternoon, kind of a light slate in the afternoon. Cubs, Orioles. I mentioned the Yankees and the Rays, A's and the Tigers, Astros and the Nationals. That was a really exciting, was it 13-12, 12-11 on Monday night. Red Sox, White Sox, that's a kind of a low-key important series. Cleveland and Minnesota, so we're getting towards the midpoint here. You always say the All-Star break is about, and that really is about the worst time of the year from a sports perspective. A little different this year with the World Cup, but that like Wednesday after the All-Star game, even the Home Run Derby, I'm not too into. But that is, I actually like the All-Star game. The All-Star game is fun. I like that they wear their uniforms again. The pitching is good. They actually try. You see the best talent. I actually like the All-Star game, so I'm excited for the All-Star game. But the Monday, the Wednesday, and then they're off Thursday. A lot of teams are off Friday, which is just a crazy, crazy break. But the All-Star break is about as dead as it gets. That and February, All-Star weekend, after football ends, it's not quite March Madness. That second, third weekend of February is a rough time. But we will get through it. We still have plenty going on. Like I said, Yankees -115 in the East. In the Central, and we got some good races here. Guardians +115, White Sox +150, Twins +650, Tigers 10-1, and the Royals 130-1. I think you're missing a zero there. The AL West, Mariners -175, Texas +245, and then the NL East, the Braves were way ahead, now just -165, Phillies +145. Mentioned Philly a few weeks ago at +400 or so is something I liked. Of course, I didn't bet it, but I mentioned I liked it. And the West, forget about it. Brewers -575, probably in good shape to win the Central. The one I like for Wednesday is the Brewers, though. I think Harrison against McGreevy is a good pitching matchup. But let's talk some Summer League, NBA offseason, some NFL. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should have bet more podcasting. Catch him. DK Sports Network, DKN Daily Bet. It is Julian Edlow. Julian, we're here, man. It's the dog days. We don't have the USA soccer run anymore. It's all baseball from now until, I don't know, a month or so from now until the Hall of Fame game. But how are you? How are you holding up and what's going on?
I'm holding up fine because I don't care about soccer, but that was embarrassing. Oof. And I'll start off with a disagreement. We don't have only baseball. We have some great summer league hoops, just amazing summer league hoops going on in Utah and the California Classic closing out just to get us to Vegas on Thursday with more summer league basketball. So we're in the heart of basketball season, Will.
I want to do summer league, not because I have even the slightest interest in it from a viewing perspective, but last year, I remember, you know, being on the air for the draft. I loved the Hornets draft. A lot of people did. I didn't put two and two together and think, you know what, maybe I should take them to win the summer league. And they cashed 100 to 1, 120 to 1, depends when and where you bet it. You could tell me probably better. But what is your approach? Are there any futures you have? What is kind of a tutorial here on how to bet the summer league?
So I'll tell you that I'm not as strong, I would say, on the futures in summer league as I am to the day-to-day, because to pick who's going to win summer league, you really have to not only know what you're doing in terms of selecting the roster, but project what that roster is going to look like towards the end, because we know almost the better the player, the less games you're going to play. AJ Dibanza, Darren Peterson, these guys are going to play. I mean, Peterson already played two games in Utah and looked great. Those guys are going to play. Maybe Peterson plays two. Maybe Dibanza plays two, three. So what are these rosters going to look like towards the back end? And there's going to be somewhat of a, both a good projection there, a good read there, and then getting lucky with what happens down the line, because these rosters change throughout the process of the Vegas Summer League. So that's why I'm more comfortable with the day-to-day, because you kind of just have to do what most people aren't willing to do. And that's almost, the first games are easier to bet because we know who's going to play. These rosters are going to be full at first. I'm going to look at the rosters this week when they're complete and decide who I like in some of these Thursday, Friday, Saturday games. And then as it goes on, you say, okay, well now Dibanza and this guy are out. What does this roster look like against this roster with a couple of guys out, and try and catch a number that you think is more reflective of the roster as its entirety versus who's playing today? And that's just the nitty gritty in doing the work there. In terms of looking down the line of who's putting in some summer league futures, I want to, and I don't know who that's going to be yet. There's more work to be done, but I want to find a team that is not necessarily about the top-end talent, but a team that has depth. So when they're down to playing without their three or four best players, you're comfortable with some good guys on the floor. So not just a team that has, you know, I'll use the Bucks as an example. Like, I think the Giannis trade is through, so they should have like Burries and Nate Amon playing in summer league. Those are two good lottery picks, and they might have another good name on the roster. But when those guys start sitting towards the end, like, is that the team you want to have your money on? Probably not. And again, I'm just going off the top of my head with an example there. So finding a team that has good back end strength to, you know, you got to get the early wins, yes, but they got to be able to get you home in those later playoff games.
Any other teams you have in mind? Any drafts just in general that you liked maybe more than the consensus or not necessarily?
I'll tell you right off the bat, and we usually do these at DK Sports, so I'm hoping that we offer them again this year, and that would be player props on some of these games. It's going to be...
That is next level, man.
Oof. Yeah, it's going to be a one-way market. It's going to be player X to score 15+, 20+, 25+. But the early angle that I'm looking at is we have 9 o'clock, the first night in Vegas, 9 o'clock East Coast, on ESPN, Wizards and Jazz. And Peterson has been playing very well in Utah, and he's made himself clear that he's always going to have something against AJ Dibanza as being that guy that went ahead of him, the guy that he has to prove something that he's better than. And he also, after Monday night's game, which the Jazz won against the Grizzlies in number 3 overall pick, he was asked about how Cam Boozer played. He said, well, I was taken one spot ahead of Cam Boozer. I'm sure he wanted to come out here and get me. So he's made his mindset pretty clear in my mind. I don't know how many games Peterson's going to play in Vegas, but we know he's going to play on ESPN against Dibansa on Thursday night. I'm interested in some Peterson point props. I want to see what that's listed at. I think he's going to come to play. It may be the only game he comes to play. He might sit after that since he has two games under his belt. He might play limited minutes in the next game and then pack it up. But that game on Thursday night, I don't know what the line's going to be. I got to look at the rosters. I don't know if I'll have a side. But I think Peterson is going to come to play as the number two overall pick and put up a big game against Ibanza. And he was doing that in the regular season in that Kansas BYU game. He was having the better game and put on a show in the first half before he slowed down, as so many times he slowed down. And we know the wraps on his legs in the second half of these games. But Thursday night in Vegas, very interested in some Darren Peterson point props, which I believe we will get.
All right, we've had a week here to kind of figure out the Jaylen Brown trade. You're in the heart of in terms of, you know, being in Boston. Has the mood changed? Have people started to say, well, I kind of see what they're doing? Are people just as mad? What's the take from you? What's the general take here on the Jaylen Brown trade to Philly about a week ago?
Yeah, Celtics fans are upset about it and pretty angry about it. And it's not just the player necessarily that you gave or the talent that you're necessarily downgrading. It's, you know, when you have a guy on your roster for 10 years that you come to love and that has won a finals MVP, like that all adds on top of it. I see what the Celtics are trying to do. It was shocking to see the trade come through and say, this is the package and this is the team. Jaylen Brown, by the way, we have been running next team markets on players on DraftKings. The Sixers were the longest shot on the board in the Jaylen Brown sweepstakes. It moved around from Celtics favored to Hornets and Blazers and all these other teams. Sixers held steady at 100-1 the entire time that market was open. It barely took any bets. And there he goes. So I was shocked to see the team. I was shocked to see the return. You've had guys like Chris Mannix come out and speak publicly saying, I know this team made an offer. I know for sure this team made an offer. And all of those teams were stunned. They felt, you know, were they offering low balls? Yes. But according to his sources, like, hey, we would have picked up, once we saw the return, we said, hey, we could have gotten up to at least that. So I'm a little questioning of, did Brad Stevens maximize Jaylen Brown's value after his career season? Was the timing right? Because you missed out on Giannis. You didn't do anything draft night to maybe get a lottery pick and get somebody in the door that can contribute right away. So did you have to do that trade on whatever that was, July 1st? Could you have waited a week or two? It was already pretty messy. It was already dragging on. Wait a week or two, pin some teams against each other, either get more picks or get if you want this. Brad Stevens continued to use the word optionality in his press conference, meaning the flexibility of having George under contract for one less year and getting some draft picks. Could you have gotten a guy expiring this year if you want that quote-unquote optionality? Could you have gotten a younger player than Paul George with the same draft pick compensation? Could you have gotten a similar player to Paul George with more draft pick compensation? Those are my questions. Could they have gotten more? And as a Celtics fan, you have Tatum and you have this team. You want to try and win now. I would have liked to see a little more come in to contribute to next season's team. But they put stock in those picks, and yeah, there's a lot of parameters around them, but one of them could wind up being something good. We don't know that. We can't use that to analyze it now. So I was shocked to see it come through. Now that the shock factor is gone, I still question if that's the best package you could have gotten for Jaylen Brown, and if doing it a week earlier, a week later, could have helped that. So that's my one. I have no problem trading Jaylen Brown. I had no problem trading Jaylen Brown 2 weeks ago. But I do question if they got the best package. And they like Paul George. They think Paul George is like a, you know, a Tatum light at this point in his career. He can play complimentary off Tatum on both sides of the ball. He can be your Tatum when he's off the floor for 12 minutes a night. I don't disagree with any of that, but did they get the most? And I think they're really strong on, Brad Stevens said analytics were a small piece of this decision from him. But was it a larger piece of the decision for other people in the organization to say, this is going to get more out of Peyton Pritchard, this is going to get more out of Hugo Gonzalez, Baylor Shireman, Jordan Walsh, etc., all these little nice players that Celtics fans love. But when you're moving Jaylen Brown, you better be right about these guys taking the next step and about Paul George fitting in and about what you're going to be able to do with the money when Paul George comes off the books or becomes an expiring contract to trade. Because they made it, I think a lot of people questioned if this was a financial decision, and they made it clear at the press conference that it was not, that they, Brad Stevens has the green light to spend when that time comes. So I would just say the Celtics better be right about the return. They better be right about the optionality that it opens them in the future. Otherwise, you open the door to look pretty silly here if it doesn't work, and or if Philly takes the next step with a former NBA Finals MVP of 2 years ago in Jaylen Brown.
Where did it go wrong with Brown? Like, what was the emergency to get this guy off the team? It can't just be, well, we floated him in the Giannis rumors, he can't stay. I mean, it seems like there's a clash between him and Tatum, but even that, do you have any take? Do you have any sort of insight into, you know, where it went wrong?
Yeah, you're asking the right question. I don't have the answer to that specific question. Brad Stevens was asked if Tatum had any say in this. He immediately responded, no. I don't know what else you would want him to say, but on the flip side, if Jason Tatum was not okay with this, this wouldn't be done, right? So, I mean, Tatum is, throughout his career, he's a pretty quiet guy. He doesn't stick his nose in any of this stuff. So I imagine he did stay pretty quiet throughout it. But had he spoken up and said, I don't think we need to move on from Brown, I don't know if this gets done. Now, the Celtics do seem pretty set on, you know, looking at that Knicks roster and saying how it's built. All right, Tatum's going to be our max guy, and we want more flexibility around that, whether that be to win with a more balanced roster like the Knicks did, or when the time is right, be able to move multiple pieces rather than a big contract like Brown, multiple pieces with picks to get the next guy in there that has a year or two left on their deal to open up a year or two championship window for them, whatever it is. I do believe Brad Stevens when he says, you know, he kept using the word optionality. We'll call it flexibility with the contracts. Like, I do believe they wanted that. And, you know, it's funny, a day later, you see Donovan Mitchell sign this deal where he's going to make over $75 million in his age 34 season. That doesn't seem good. Like, it doesn't seem like you want to be left with that. So I understand them getting ahead of the eight ball here and, you know, not having Jaylen Brown in those final years of his contract as he's 33 years old. But it's underwhelming until you see what the next move is or how this roster grows as it is. But in terms of why it progressed so quickly, like, yeah, that's my question. Okay, so you miss on Giannis. Why not wait it out? Because it sounds like there are teams that maybe could have competed with this package. At the very least, let's say it's an even package so you don't have to send them to the Sixers in the division. Maybe somebody steps it up and offers you a little bit more or a little bit more youth than a 36-year-old Paul George. It's just the package that I'm having a hard time accepting. And like you said, why it had to come together so quick, because I don't have that answer. Once you're past Giannis and past the draft, you can let this go on for a week, a month, and still get it done, maybe for a better return.
The East, which for years has pretty much been the JV circuit. Usually the West is stronger than the East. There's some exceptions, but this is a really good deep East. It's competitive. It's interesting. Even the teams at the bottom, like the Hawks, the Magic, the Hornets, it's pretty balanced. It's pretty deep. It's very interesting. Plus 320 for the Knicks to win the East, plus 450 for the Celtics, 76ers plus 750, Pistons plus 850, so are the Cavs and Raptors, Heat 9-1, Pacers 16-1. I'll stop there. You have to make a bet. I'm forcing you to make one bet. What is the best bet among all those?
Well, let me start with this and say that the best bet to win the East is whoever you think that is, betting them to win the championship. Because when you look at the odds, some of these teams to win the East, their price to win it all is like 2.5 to 3 times more to win it all, when it should in theory be doubled. And you mentioned the big bad West. Well, the Knicks just handled the Spurs with ease in 5 games, and that series goes under. the Pacers just took Big Bad OKC to a game seven, and who knows what happens if Halliburton doesn't tear his ACL or tear his Achilles. Before that, it was the Celtics in the East. Before that, it was the Nuggets, who, you know, beat a play-in Miami team. And before that, the Warriors beat the Celtics, and then the Bucks as underdogs beat the Suns the year before that. So some of these East teams have been beating or giving a run for their money to these perceived big bad Western Conference teams. So I would say bet them all to win it all rather than the East. And to win it all, I think the Pacers are a pretty good number. They're going to have a pretty big bounce back, you would think, with Halliburton, Zubats. They have a pretty nice team in place there. So the Pacers were really the first place that my eye went. Charlotte, I don't know if I believe in them all the way, but you can still get them at like 9-1 to win that division. If things don't work out in Miami with Giannis, Orlando has never, they keep trying to put it together, but they don't. Atlanta was nice, but are they better than the Hornets at this point? I like what the Hornets did a lot. I think they're worth a potential stab in futures markets, and definitely that like 8-10-1 range to win the division. And then maybe I'm being a little homery here, but a huge drop off on the number with the Celtics. I don't know if they have the grit to beat a team like the Knicks. They haven't in past years. I don't think they would have this year. They got beat up last year. But saying this is the number to drop the Celtics based on going from Brown to George and what they believe the growth is going to be with these other guys, I'm not saying the Celtics are the best bet. I would go longer odds like a Pacers. We've had long shots coming out of the East many years now. But the Celtics, I think, were cut too much. I don't think they got that much worse for next season, as despite my, you know, disliking of exactly what the return was for Jaylen Brown.
Your favorite football bet, college or NFL, is what?
Ooh, I've been heavier on the college side so far than the NFL side, mostly because I handle our college football content over at DraftKings Network. All right, I'm going to give you an over and an under because I like them both equally. Georgia over 9.5 is juicy. I think it's like minus 180 range now. You can either take the juice or go half and half with something that you think is a parlay worthwhile. Like, you got that. I gave it out on my podcast, DraftKings Network Daily Bets. This Max Holloway fight coming up with Conor McGregor. McGregor's taking all this money. Holloway's getting cheaper and cheaper. Like, Holloway with Georgia for some of it, and then Georgia over 9.5 minus 180 for the rest of it. They don't play Texas. They have a very manageable schedule by SEC standards. Their two toughest games are on the road against Alabama and Ole Miss. I think they're -3 at Alabama and -4.5 at Ole Miss. Those are two big revenge games. I know they got Bama handily in the SEC championship game, but they lost at home to Bama last year to snap that, whatever it was, 30-something home winning streak. And I think Bama took a little bit of a step back this year. So that should be a good spot for them in their quote-unquote tough game. And then the Ole Miss game is revenge for the playoff loss. I think they're going to be locked in for that. You got Stockton back. You got a loaded backfield. You have a great offensive line, and the defense is the defense with Georgia. They just kind of reload. So I think Georgia getting to 10 wins is pretty modest ask of that team with what they have back in that schedule. And then also in the SEC, I took Arkansas under 4.5, which was -160. Again, we're going a little juicy here, but they won their first two games against no names to start last year. They lost their next 10. They did nothing to get better. They play, I've been reading all the college football magazines, they all have Arkansas between the first and fourth most difficult schedule in the country. There's an extra SEC game this year, so they got to go 9 SEC games. And I think, is it Arkansas that goes out to Utah early?
I think so.
I got to check on, let me pull it up, but I think it's Arkansas that goes out to Utah early. So yeah, week 2 at Utah for Arkansas. So you got 9 SEC games. You're projected everywhere you look as the dead last team in the SEC. They're going to be a dog in every SEC game. You got to go to Utah, which you're going to be a dog. So you got the same thing as last year. You have two, what should be sure thing wins. You got to get three more out of either the SEC or at Utah. I don't see that happening with this team. And the defense was a mess last year. You remember watching those games. I think Arkansas is going to be pretty bad. Getting to 5-7, way too big of an ask.
Julian, you're the best, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the summer. Where can we find you?
Quick and easy. Wow. No food questions. Nothing.
Get in, get out.
On Twitter, at Julian Edlow, and all the college football content will be ramping up, and NBA Summer League content over at DraftKings Network.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Julian Edlow. We'll be back on Friday. See you then.